Welcome to my monthly podcast series titled Becoming a Sage. My name is Jan Freed, but you can call me Dr. Jan. In this series, I interview people to seek wisdom about living and leading a life on purpose. My passion is helping people find purpose and meaning in their lives on a daily basis for the rest of their lives, a concept I call breadcrumb legacy. I'm also on a mission to retire the word retirement. We are not retiring from life, but moving on to something else. And I believe it takes time and intentional thought to successfully move on to what's next in life. Today, I'm interviewing Dr. Ben Hardy. Dr. Ben Hardy has a PhD in organizational psychology. He's the best-selling author of Willpower Doesn't Work. He has a new book coming out, Personality Isn't Permanent. From 2015 to 2018, he was the number one writer in the world on Medium.com. Now, I just started writing on Medium about 6 months ago, and so I'd love to have some tips on this, Ben, if you're willing to share any.
Anytime.
I will
admit that it's not the same place it used to be. Like, it's just totally a different beast than it was like 3 or 4 years ago, but... Happy to share anything I know.
I'd appreciate that just because I'm enjoying it. I've discovered a lot of great writers and thinkers on this. So for more information about Ben, please refer to the bio at the end of this podcast. So welcome to the series, Ben.
Very happy to be with you.
Okay. Is it okay if I call you Ben?
Oh yeah, please do.
Okay, great.
That's what I would prefer.
Well, I discovered Ben from reading his articles on Medium. And I learned a lot, so I subscribe to his blog now. And so I couldn't wait to interview Ben for my podcast. So I'm very honored. So thank you very much. Well, we are both interested in personal and professional development. And share with us some concepts that you think people need to know and focus on, basically, given COVID-19. So when I say that, what comes to mind in terms of... what should people really be thinking about and doing now? What advice would you give them?
Yeah, COVID-19 is an interesting situation, obviously. I just reread the book, Man's Search for Meaning. Have you read that book?
Yes. And, so many people, Jim Collins, that's on his favorite list. I mean, it's on so many people. Yes.
Yeah, but I think it's very relevant right now. Obviously, we're not in a Holocaust, and I think it's good to remember that. but one of the things that Frankl talked about is that, and he says this over and over, and it really stuck out to me this time, because I've read the book many, many times, but this time it really resonated that the people in the concentration camps who lost a sense of future, therefore they had a loss of purpose, they then lost meaning in their lives, and they died very quickly. Mm-hmm. And so there were a lot of people, as an example, who were... like looking forward to Christmas, like a lot of the Jews in the concentration camp, they believed that by Christmas they would be out. And so like that was their future. And when Christmas would come and they weren't out, droves of people would die because they lost that sense of future. And so Frankl talks over and over and over about that book, about how you can only have meaning in your life if you have a purpose, and purpose is always in the future. And that's what you were just talking about with people who retire. I thought that was really relevant. Is that when you lose that sense of future, you can die very quickly as far as like your soul. Like, so I think with COVID-19, it's very important to kind of get back to the future. If you don't have a sense of future and purpose, then right now you're going to lose a lot of meaning, and this whole situation is going to be more, you're going to give the wrong meaning to this experience, and it's going to be more negative than it has to be. Mm-hmm. And so I think continually reminding yourself of who is it you want to become? Who's your future self? How do you get beyond this? I've asked a lot of people that question, how is your future self helping you get beyond COVID-19? They're like, it's helping me to stay focused. It's helping me to find purpose even when things are hard. So I think that's a big one. I think go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I think the other one is that I've asked, and I think it's really meaningful for people, is what are some of the decisions you made before this happened that you're grateful you did now that we're here? Because none of us could have predicted this.
No.
And so it's like, what are some of the investments or some of the decisions or some of the things that you did before this occurred? Some of, let's just say, the preparations, because you may not have been preparing for this, but in some way you were preparing for. And so I think that when people think about some of the things that they did before this, that now they're really glad they did, it allows you to have a positive view of your past, which I think is really key as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's excellent. Well, I mentioned that you have a new book coming out, Personality Isn't Permanent. And I, because I subscribe to your blog, I was able to download a chapter and now I can't wait to buy it. So I'm looking forward to that. Tell us about the book.
Yeah, this book is kind of a deep dive into a lot of the research on the subject of personality. I think a lot of people kind of have it wrong. People don't really, I think there's common wisdom about personality. For example, that it's innate, it's non-changeable. It can be categorized into types. You know, like there's a lot of ideas about personality that lead people to having a fixed mindset. And kind of the common wisdom is that you find who you are, you discover yourself, and then once you've discovered your true self, you can then build your life around your personality. Your goals become the byproduct of your personality. And this book is about how your personality is going to change over your lifetime, whether you try to do anything about it or not. If you're someone who's growth oriented, you can change it a big amount. And I also kind of break down some of the negative aspects of things like personality tests, about how those can create a fixed mindset. I explain things like trauma and how trauma shapes your personality and how you can reframe it. And then the big one is how to frame out your future self and how to use that as kind of the benchmarker for who you become. But yeah, there's a lot of really exciting and fascinating stuff. My big hope for this book is that it does give people hope. Mm-hmm. I think people want to be able to make improvements in their life. The research shows that over 90% of people want to make big changes in their life. And if they don't believe they can, then they won't.
Yes. No, I think your book is going to be very timely. So I think that's wonderful. Do you agree with Carol Dweck's mindset and the growth mindset?
I think that book is one of the best books.
Okay.
I think Carol Dweck's work is some of the most important. And if you actually go through that book, there are so many layers. I mean, that's a book that you could study so in depth. It's very good.
I think important. It's excellent too. Yeah.
It's a very important book.
Yes. Very good. Your blogs are excellent. And I mentioned that before, you include many quotes and I learned something from every blog I read. And you often cite Dan Sullivan. Now, I know of his work in coaching. I don't know him, but I know of his work. And one concept that I really liked you blogged about recently was the gap and the gain. And in fact, I sent that to each of my grown sons. And I just wondered if you would share that concept with our listeners.
Of course. I think it's an important one. I actually was just helping people do that. But the gain is about looking at what's actually happened in the short period of time. I'll give a quick example because it's easy with kids.
Uh-huh.
A couple of days ago, can you still hear me? Did I pause out?
Yes, no.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, I'll give a quick example, but then I'll pull this concept out because it's super important.
Okay.
So recently, my son, my oldest son, who's 12 years old, he often tries to get himself out of work. You know, he loves to just kind of get himself out of tasks. Well, there was a time when he did that recently, and I got a little frustrated. It kind of triggers me. And so I said, Caleb, you're always trying to get out of stuff. And my wife, I'm glad she did, corrected me. And she said, first off, don't say always, because it's not true. And then she pointed me to what happened earlier in the day and how Caleb was actually being incredibly on task, incredibly proactive. Oh yeah, you're right. Like, and so I was like, Caleb, super sorry. And then I thought about it and my wife helped me think about it. She said, if you think like, look, Caleb's actually gotten a lot better at doing his stuff. He's, you know, and that's kind of focusing on the gain. It's like, I was like, and I took some time to think about it. I'm like, holy cow. Like, he doesn't always try to get out of stuff. And actually, he's made huge progress in the past 3 to 6 months. He's in the past year, holy cow, he's made huge progress. And listening, and so that's kind of focusing on the gains. It's easy to focus on gaps. It's easy to kind of focus on where you're not showing up or focusing on where other people are not showing up. But if you take the time to like actually be mindful of progress, you can actually see that a lot of good stuff has happened, either for yourself or for someone else. And being in the gain allows you to, first off, see that progress has occurred, which gives you a sense of excitement, motivation, and confidence, which can actually propel your goals. But it also just allows you to like find joy. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're always focused on the gap, like, you know, and I think I'm huge on goals. But if you're always measuring yourself against some like unachievable future, then you're never going to feel great. It's really nice. I think it's important to kind of, it's really important to have a goal that you use kind of as a benchmark for your behavior. Mm-hmm. But to measure yourself. It's really good to measure yourself against where you were 30 mm-hmm. days ago, even like a year ago, 2 years ago. It's so fun to look at old goals and just say like, holy cow, look at how far I've come. It just is really great for your identity.
No, that's good advice. You know, when you were using your son as an example, you know, I used to say, even though my three sons are grown now, you know, I used to say, you know, I have a PhD, but it's not in parenting. Okay. You know, I mean, it's tough stuff. So now that's a good example. Any other concepts that you'd want to share from Dan Sullivan that, you know, you quote him often and I like that, but anything come to mind? I mean, maybe not. I'm just throwing this question at you.
You know, what's funny is Dan and I actually have a book coming out together. We've co-authored a book. We've co-authored a book together that comes out in October with Hay House. It's called Who Not How.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah. I quote him cause I learn from him a lot and we collaborate. Uh-huh. And so Personality Isn't Permanent comes out in June. Who Not How, which is a book I wrote with him, which is almost more purely entrepreneurial. Although there's a lot of psychology in it cause can't not do that with me.
Right.
But, that book comes out in October. So there's a lot of great ideas from Dan. I mean, you know, sure. One of the things that I talk about in this book, in Personality Isn't Permanent, is that confidence is built by making progress towards goals that are above your current capabilities. So I'll say that again.
Yeah.
You know, confidence is built by making progress towards goals that are above your present capabilities. And so I think it's really important to have goals that are way above your current self. And as you make progress towards them, that's how you build confidence. You know, you get small wins along the way and you start to believe that future is possible, which then expands what you believe you can do.
So like stretch goals, are you talking about kind of, or?
Yeah. I mean, I think all our goals should be above our current self. I mean, you should set all your goals to some degree should be a stretch to your current.
Sure.
But you build confidence by actually making progress towards goals that are above your current self. Mm-hmm. And, you know, often it takes commitment and courage to build confidence. It always takes courage to step outside your comfort zone. Actually, your personality could kind of be viewed as your comfort zone. It's who you're comfortable being. And to do anything outside of that puts you in a situation of uncertainty, but that's where you develop flexibility and confidence.
Yeah.
And confidence allows you to pursue things that are bigger and bigger above what you've done before without being so worried about failing along the way. I mean, that really brings back in the Carol Dweck work where it's like, you know, if you have confidence, you're not worried about what people think. You know, you're okay failing along the way and you're not defined by those failures. And you're also willing to try stuff that will stretch you, that will help you to grow. You believe you can grow and you can develop.
Right.
And so, yeah, those are little sprinkles of some Dan Sullivan ideas.
that's great. Well, you and I both believe in personal development. And I've often said that leadership development is all about personal development.
Couldn't agree more.
So given your research and life experience, what can you share with us about how to become better people?
Just better in general?
Yeah, better in general. Because, you know, I had a leadership book come out in 2013. It's called Leading with Wisdom, Sage Advice from 100 Experts. And one of my conclusions after interviewing some of the top thought leaders, I didn't know of you then, but some of the top thought leaders, you know, Warren Bennis, and I mean, several people have died since I completed the book and the research, but, you know, Marshall Goldsmith and Peter Senge, Margaret Wheatley, Sally Helgeson, you know, one of my conclusions was, it's hard to be a good leader if you're not a good person. So when I just make that statement, what comes to your mind based on your work and research?
I love what you're saying. I think it's beautiful. I'm a big believer from a leadership perspective that I don't necessarily want to follow someone who's not actively seeking a bigger future themselves. Mm-hmm. So like, I like following people who are in the student role in a lot of their lives. Obviously, we all have different roles. And so if someone's my leader, then in that role, they're my leader. But I also want them to be a student in many roles of their lives because they're actively growing and they're still that student, which keeps them humble. They haven't arrived, mm-hmm. in other words. I think that that's crucial for being a good person, is to just know that you have never arrived. I also think knowing that your current self is actually temporary is, where does that sound? It's like one of the big things I talk about in the book is that your future self is a different person than you are today. Just like you're not the same person as you were 10 years ago.
Right.
You know, you're different than you were in the past. Your future self is actually going to be just as different in the future. So because that's true, you shouldn't be so definitive about who you are today. You shouldn't use such, you know, strong statements like I'm an X, you know, I'm good. I'm bad with people. I'm an introvert. Like those statements actually lead you to becoming non-flexible. It's better to actually hold your current identity a little bit more loosely and to get really clear on the person you want to be, and then to define yourself kind of more from that perspective, that this is who you're striving to be, even though you're not there yet. I think that allows you to not get so rigid in how you see things. I think, I mean, as far as just general concepts about how to be a good person, I think, you know, I think being humble, like seeking feedback, being open to being wrong, listening, caring. I think doing things that force you to change in a positive way. You know, like I think that I've become a better person because we had 3 foster kids for 3 years. Like I think before that I would have considered myself a good person, but sometimes you think you're a certain way until that's put to the test. Like sure. I before I was a foster parent, I probably would have considered myself a very patient person. But then you put me in the situation where there's these 3 screaming kids, my patience is 0. And so like, did I really have patience or was it just really nice in my cushy life? And so I think that putting yourself in situations that require you to make some serious adjustments under pressure where these attributes are actually put to the test. I've become a lot more patient, a lot more empathetic. My perspective and my priorities, in my opinion, are a lot better and more mature than they were when it was just all about me. Mm-hmm. So I think putting yourself in situations of service, putting yourself in situations where you help other people, and where you, I forgot who I heard it from. Just so you know, actually, we did send you the full book. You have it in your email. So you can read it at any time you want, but the conclusion story of this book.
Thank you.
Yeah. The conclusion story of this book is about a woman whose son died. He was 4 years old. And you know, she was asleep and stuff like that, and the son walked outside and fell into an irrigation canal and died. And obviously this mom felt horrible because, you know, and anyways, you know, you fast forward 20 years after she goes through a depression, almost kills herself. She ends up having a supportive person help her through that. And now she's got this deep sense of purpose because she now helps other parents who go through similar situations. But one of the things that she says is that before all this happened, she never really cared about other people. Like she wouldn't entwine herself in other people's problems. But now she very much is someone who focuses on other people, and she's fine getting herself tangled up in other people's problems, like because she cares enough that she's willing to jump in and help people. And I thought that was really cool. And you know, often some of the most hard experiences you go through, if you choose to give them healthy meaning, you know, something can be super negative and can be super traumatic, and you can use that as kind of an excuse for justifying why you're stuck in the past. Or you can use that to really soften you or strengthen you to help you become a better person.
Yeah. Well, those are great. I can't wait to read the book. And those are great examples, which kind of leads me to think of, you know, your work. How is your work, or what are you thinking about your work now during COVID-19? You know, during this pandemic, you know, what has your work become more meaningful in terms of how it could help others, or, you know, has anything changed in your mind?
No.
No?
Not for myself, no, because my work kind of stretches beyond temporary situations, in my opinion. I think it's applicable. I think
it's very timely, yes.
I think it's very applicable, but I try to look at what goes beyond, like if the stock market crashes, or if something, you know, like... Even the example I just gave of the woman whose son died, like what is true even if you're going through a pandemic? You know, what's true if ever, you know, like, and so I think that the principles are very emphasized in situations like this. and the ideas and the science, but to me, it does, my worldview doesn't change because of this. And it doesn't necessarily change what I think is valuable in this life. Yeah.
No, I think that's great. Well, you know, you are very science-based and research-based, and I really do appreciate that. What are the most effective science-based ways for making radical change in a person's life?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot. I think it's,
I'm sure.
Yeah. I'll start with the core ones. I think that, okay. I think it really always starts with identity. I think you have to define who you are and who you want to be. If you don't know who you are, then you're essentially going to be a product of your environment. And so you won't really have a stand or have anything that you believe in. You'll have a lack of meaning and purpose in your life. So I think you really want to start with your future self. Like what they say is that the number one regret that people have on their deathbeds is that they didn't have the courage to be who they wanted to be. Instead, mm-hmm. they lived up to the expectations of those around them. Mm-hmm. And so I think that you really need to take the time to define who you want to be in the future. Daniel Gilbert, who he gave a great TED talk. Your people would love this.
Happiness. Isn't he the happiness guy?
He is, but this is a very different TED talk. So he's a Harvard. I'm glad you know about that though. You're a big reader. I can tell. He gave a TED talk called The Psychology of Your Future Self. Mm. It's a 6-minute TED talk. Worth reading. It explains how personality changes and develops over time, and also why people have a hard time framing out their future self. We don't spend the time to imagine and decide upon the person we want to be. We spend too much of our time remembering who we've been. And so I think the first step is defining who your future self is. I think 2 to 3 years into the future is a great starting point as far as who do you want to be in 2 or 3 years. This would involve your attributes, your characteristics, your circumstances, could be your income, like literally just shaping out a vision of your future self. Mm-hmm. The next step beyond that would be actually to begin telling everyone about that. So identity is often shaped by the story you use to explain yourself. So like you explain yourself a certain way to people. It becomes very powerful when you begin explaining yourself based on your desired future self. When you begin saying, this is the person I'm striving to become. Uh-huh. And who you are today actually matters far less. Uh-huh. Who you are today really doesn't matter that much compared to who you're striving to become. Uh-huh. So rather than speaking in such definitive terms about this is who I am, it's no, this is my future self. This is what I'm striving for. I'm not there yet, but this is what I'm going for. And this is what I'm committed to. That allows you first off to believe it more because you're telling people about it. And it takes mm-hmm. a lot of courage sometimes to tell people about your true goals. Mm-hmm. But it really allows you to believe it more. It leads you to wanting to act more courageously. The goal is that your future is the thing driving your behavior, not the past. And so you want to tell people about it, and it really allows your environment to be clarified so that people are either supporting you or not supporting you. The people who are not supporting your future self are the people who want you to stay the same person as you were in the past, which may not be who you want to be anymore. After you've begun telling people about it, I would say you need to start investing in it. Have you ever heard the story that Zig Ziglar tells about Tom Hartman? You remember the old Zig Ziglar stories?
I know some of them, but I don't know if I'm remembering.
I'll tell that. This one. This one's a good one. It's just okay. A short one. I can tell it in like 30 seconds. But basically, Zig Ziglar tells this story of this really overweight guy who came to one of his seminars. And, he learned about self-image and about, this guy was like over 400 pounds. And anyways, he decided to start acting towards his future self, which was a skinny person. So after the conference, he, like a week or two later, he went to a suit store and he ended up buying a bunch of very fitted suits that would fit a skinny person. And the person who was the tailor or whatnot of the suit store said, "Who are these for, Tom?" And he said, "They're for myself." And so he bought them. Obviously the guy who was selling him the suits probably was like, whatever, but the idea, there's two concepts there. One is he was telling people about his future self. He said, "These suits are for me." He was owning his future identity, irrespective of his present self. He was also investing money into his future identity. He was spending money on suits. When you invest money into goals, you become far more committed to those goals. Mm-hmm. And so I think you want to invest at the level of your future self. He was buying skinny clothes. And when I really started growing as a writer was when I started investing in education and mentorships. You really become committed, but also you start to believe it. You want it. You identify with it. And so, those are just a few elements. Obviously in the book, I go through so many more.
No, that's excellent. Well, I'll share with you my vision of future self.
That's what I want to hear more than anything.
Okay. I tell people I want to be the Dr. Ruth of second half of life. So what I mean by that is Dr. Ruth, do you know Dr. Ruth? No? Well, okay, that shows that you're much younger than I am. Anyway, Dr. Ruth is like a sex therapist, but awesome. She's 91. And so she started out with a radio show. And so the reason why I say that is because Dr. Ruth has been on a speaking circuit. She still speaks. She still writes. She has books coming out. And people 50 plus know Dr. Ruth. I've seen her actually 3 times in person. But, you know, at 91, I still want to be writing, speaking, and as curious as she is. So anyway, that's funny.
But I love that. So yeah. What specifically are you going to be writing about and doing when you're in your 90s? Where are you going to be in your 90s when you're doing that?
Yeah. Well, I want to be writing about how to leave a legacy and how to live a life on purpose and those kinds of things. So we'll see what happens, but I'm trying to lean into that. And by telling you, I that's good. Well, when
tell more people, keep telling everyone about that.
Okay, I will, because and actually it's kind of interesting because I was telling this one more of an acquaintance. She's a lawyer at a big insurance company here, and she said, you know, Jan, I think you're onto something, because she said when Dr. Ruth was talking about sex, it was in the 80s and nobody wanted to talk about sex. And she said, now you want to talk about retirement or a new vision of retirement. And a lot of people want to be in denial. They don't want to talk about retirement. Boomers don't want to talk about, you know, losing their platform and their identity. And so she said, I think you're really onto something. So I need to kind of figure out this. So, but I mentioned I'm really big into legacy. So when I use the word legacy, can you tell me a story or an impression? What comes to mind for you? Because you are younger than I am. And I mean, does anything come to mind, Ben, when I use that word?
Definitely. Yeah, okay. Stuff comes to mind. And by the way, I love how you ask questions as far as just what comes to mind. I think it's really a beautiful way that you ask questions.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, to me, legacy is more about, you know, obviously the idea is what you leave behind or how you're remembered. For me, my legacy is more about... And I'm not really that worried about it to many degrees. Like, I think that kind of it takes care of itself. But for me, my family is a big aspect of my legacy, my kids. Like, I just want to not necessarily be remembered, although I'm sure I will be, but I want the things that I believe in, that I believe are important, to be infused into my kids, you know, and that they appreciate those things and are grateful. I have so much gratitude as an example for my grandfather Rex, who's not with us anymore, but like, you know, I hope to carry his legacy on. In other words, like, even though I don't necessarily exactly see things exactly the same way, my life would not be where it's at if it wasn't for him. And so like, there's so much good research, but it just makes sense about the idea of having a sense of family history. Mm-hmm. And about, you know, obviously legacy goes beyond that as far as the work you do for other people beyond that. But I just think that, you know, it's good to have a sense of roots and good to recognize that you are enabled because of the hard work of other people. I mean, even like the founding fathers, us being in here in America, but I mean, just all the people who have laid their ground so that we can be where we're at. And so, you know, I just hope that I can provide that for my family so that I can enable them to do things that would otherwise not be possible, and that they can feel that, and that they could be like, to just appreciate what hopefully I've done for them.
Uh-huh. Do you have any family traditions or rituals, or how are you trying to make sure that you are instilling some of those habits or beliefs, or so that you are passing on what you think is important?
We have all sorts of stuff. Yeah. Sure. I mean, we, you know,
A lot of families don't. So
it's true. No, it's true. We do all sorts of stuff as a family together. You know, I mean, we'll read books together, study like, you know, like religious or spiritual books together. We have traditions of, I mean, we moved down here to freaking Orlando, Florida, because my wife's a huge Disney buff. I mean, when it's not COVID-19, we go to Disney a few times a week just because like, you know, and obviously that's not like to each their own, but like, I just think we do stuff as a family. I mean, you know, last night we played tennis together. I think just like, I mean, obviously we have Here's what's interesting. Speaking of, Dr. What, Ruth? Because our kids are homeschooled and my wife has been teaching our kids all through the maturation process, just like having really open conversations, because our three older kids are 12, 10, and 8. And if you're in public education, you get one lesson on that. It's kind of awkward. Right. We're going deep with this. And I just think that we just want our kids to feel like they can talk to us, that they understand things, that we're not afraid to have taboo conversations, but also that we have great memories together. I mean, dinner together, trips together, but also really instilling kind of the values and kind of the beliefs that we have, and obviously totally respectful about their ability to make their own decisions in the future. But we really want to just not hide any of that stuff from our kids.
No, I think that's great. I think that's wonderful. Well, we're kind of coming to an end here. I know you're a busy person, so I really do appreciate the time you've given us. I always like to close with, what else would you like to share with us that, listeners need to know, or words of wisdom, or, what do you really want us to remember that maybe I haven't even asked?
Every conversation's different, Sure. So, I think that what we talked about here was probably exciting to your people because they just love you and follow you, Brooke. And so I think that, I think that where we're at is great. I'm just grateful that we got to chat. If anyone's interested in going deeper, obviously the book is called Personality is Impermanent. There's a lot in here, as far as trauma, how trauma can shape personality, about how to shape your narrative. I guess I would just say that the invitation I would have to people, outside of just reading the book, is go check out that TED Talk, The Psychology of Your Future Self. Mm-hmm. And then what I would invite people to do is to really begin thinking about who their future self is, and then to have the courage to use that as the benchmarker for their behavior. In psychology, basically one of the core ideas is that the best way to predict a person's future is by looking at the past.
Yes.
And I actually, although that's true for most people, I think that anyone who's seeking growth, they don't want that to be true for them. Think about it. You don't want to be the same person you were in the past. If you're someone with an addiction or something, but none of us, but you want your future to be different and hopefully better. And so the best way to do that, and the only way to live intentionally, is to actually think about and design that future, and then to start courageously and daily moving in that direction.
Yes.
Here's a Dan Sullivan idea. The bigger your future, the better your present. Because the bigger your future is, the better your daily process and practices will be to get there. You'll be actively seeking things beyond your current self. You won't just be going through the motions.
Right. No, that's great.
If you're not living intentionally, go ahead.
Yeah, I even have a picture of Dr. Ruth and me in my office. So
you've designed an environment to trigger and remind you of your future self. I mean, I think that that's gorgeous. You will love that, because as you'll see when you get to the book, I talk a lot about putting those type of mementos or things in your environment so that you're constantly reminded of where you're going. I think that's absolutely beautiful.
Okay. Well, that's great. Well, thank you so much. Well, you've given us a lot to think about. And the emphasis in this series is on learning how to make the rest of life the best of life. And so, Ben, may the rest be the best for you and your family.